This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is VSiN by the Books on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It is the top of the hour. VSiN by the Books, Dave Ross right here at the Mint Gaming Hall in Franklin, Kentucky. Our closer, Jensen Lewis, back home in Cleveland, Ohio. Lots to get to this in this final hour. Stephen Hennessy is going to join us. Live update of maybe history in the making right now at the Open Championship over there at Royal Birkdale. And Anthony DeBundo is going to join the program once again. Boy, it's been a lot of fun talking World Cup soccer. We get to do it for one more day here, Jensen, and one more hour as we're going to break down Argentina and Spain for all the marbles on Sunday. But I mentioned that we might have history in the making right now. That's where we begin our highlights and headlines. And I totally screwed that up, Jensen. That's on me. I've been watching this, trying to get a feel for what's going on over there at the Open Championship. Lucas Herbert is playing the 18th hole. But I want to talk some baseball with you, and that's why we're talking Daily Diamond, my friend. So slip lane right now. That's on me. Operator error. But with baseball now being back in the second half of the season, Jensen, what are you going to be looking on early and often here?
Yeah. Okay. So with all of the issues here in the Midwest because of the wildfires in Canada, I'm anxious to see what happens with some of these East Coast and Midwest based games. It sounds like, Dave, from where we are here in Cleveland, the Guardians host the Pirates for a 3-game set to start tonight. Really good matchup. Jared Jones, Gavin Williams. Everything I've heard is that it's all systems go. Our air quality index here is a bit better than where it was yesterday. The Mets and the Phillies did play an hour earlier than scheduled first pitch time. They moved it up from 7:10 to 6:10 yesterday because of the deteriorating conditions and the air quality yesterday. So if that's any indicator, then I think everything goes off without a hitch. That being said, we do have a day-night doubleheader in Boston between Tampa Bay and the Red Sox. They will play at 1:35 Eastern. And Dave, that one will be Griffin Jacks against Jake Bennett. Really two hurlers that have been outstanding to finish the first half of the season. Anxious to watch it just because we get some day baseball, period. But as I look at it right now, I would lean the under 8.5 in that game, the way that both those guys have been at the moment. I do want to wait and see what some lineups look like, particularly for some of these starting pitching matchups. But that's my early lean there for game one of Rays and Red Sox. We do get Dodgers Yankees at the stadium tonight, 7:05 Eastern. That is going to be Roky Sasaki against Gerrit Cole. Now, traditionally, I would look at that game and say, oh, I'd love to take the Dodgers at a short road favorite price. The problem is it's Roky Sasaki. So I think I'm going to wait to see where the market kind of goes here a little bit. That is my early lean, would be the Dodgers. I'll take the better offense against what's been an inconsistent Gerrit Cole. But I don't want to lock anything in yet until I kind of see where lineups are, particularly for what the Yankees would run out there. And then kind of see where the chips may fall. The only one that I would look at really right now as one that kind of jumps out to me, not only from a money line perspective, but a total. I would look at two offenses that really were great headed into the break. And let's go to Wrigley Field, where the Twins and the Cubs are going to do battle. It's a high total, Dave, of 10.5. But I really actually like both offenses to get the better of both these starting pitchers. It's going to be Bailey Ober against Colin Ray. That's an 8:05 Eastern first pitch. But I would, if there's a total that I would jump on right now, I like the over in that one. The Twins, one of the highest scoring teams in the first half, along with the offensive resurgence here of what the Chicago Cubs have done as a team. Just wanted to bring up the numbers here real quickly from an offensive standpoint. If you go back to July 1st here at the beginning of the month and you look at the offenses in Major League Baseball, Chicago is at a 2.2 offensive wins above replacement. That's one of the best marks, only beaten by Miami, Washington, and Pittsburgh. The Minnesota Twins are 11th there since July 1st. So I like both those offenses to continue in what should be some interesting conditions. As I mentioned, with the wildfires, we know Chicago was a place that got hit really hard yesterday in the air quality index. Mm-hmm. But I would expect if this thing goes off tonight, we should see both offenses take advantage.
If I'm picking up a little bit of what you've been putting down here over the course of this week, as we've kind of really looked ahead to the second half of the season, I know Milwaukee's a massive favorite to win that division at minus 575. The Cubs at the second betting choice at plus 450. Do you see value in that number? Do you think at the end of the day that even though it looks like Milwaukee in a landslide right now, that things could tighten up towards the end of this regular season?
I need pitching to kind of come through a bit more if I'm backing Chicago. And the problem with that is they need an opportunity to kind of get healthy rather quickly. You know, and Edward Cabrera coming back from a hamstring issue, same with Jameson Taillon. I think I would rather play a little differently here. If I think the Cubs are getting in, And the market is overwhelming that they will. You got to lay $5.25 for the Cubs to make the postseason. I think I'd be a little more intrigued at the Cubs plus 850 to win the National League. And then I would rather take my chances on a monetization in either the wild card round or if they make it through into the divisional round. So that would be where I would go. World Series wise for the Cubs, 17-1. You know me, cross-border parlay time.
Oh, yeah.
A little Spain to win the cup. Parlay with the Cubs to win the World Series is 29-1. Okay. I think I need to get into the 20s if I want anything to do with the Cubs right now, the way they're currently constructed.
One other series I just want to get your thoughts on, and I wonder in context of the trade deadline coming up August 3rd. Cardinals and Diamondbacks are going to begin an interesting series today. With those two teams, maybe one overachieving and one maybe kind of, I don't know, where they might think they should be in the D-backs here. Clearly, the Cardinals have overachieved from the beginning of the year. How soon will GM's front offices say, based on what the start looks like in the second half, before we decide if we're going to add or sell at the trade deadline?
Yeah, good question. Okay, unique schedule, for the Cardinals to start. They will begin in the West Coast, taking on not only the Diamondbacks, but they'll also play the last place Angels. They will come back home and ironically have to make up a game against the Diamondbacks. So Arizona's got to come east. They burn that off day on Thursday the 23rd, and then the Reds are in town against the Cardinals. That's a really easy schedule for St. Louis to start the second half. They need another starting pitcher. I think just to guard against, I mean, if you're going to take St. Louis seriously, I think they need a frontline starting pitcher. Dustin May's been great. McGreevy's been awesome. Libertor and Leahy have actually pitched really well the last 2 weeks before the end of the first half. Yeah. Viability. And again, Dave, this is an exercise in if you put St. Louis, who right now, let's see, standings wise, I think they would be the second wild card behind the Cubs. They would have to play. They'd be on the outside looking in. My apologies. Miami is the last wild card. St. Louis is a game behind. Okay. So I would need a frontline starting pitcher, I think, to take them seriously, man. In a wild card series, I'm right. Saying that the Cardinals would be underdogs against all three of the current wild card teams: Cubs, Phillies, Marlins,
even the Fish.
I don't know if I can buy stock in them. I would need to wait and see if they take care of business against this soft of a schedule to start. Then maybe they get a little more bullish and swing a little bit bigger.
I think I know your answer, Counselor, as I redirect this question to the American League side. For the Orioles and Astros beginning a set today down there in H-Town, do you think the die has already been cast there that both these teams do not have visions of wild card grandeur and say we will be selling and we've got some big assets we could sell come trade deadline time?
Yeah, I listen, Baltimore is right there. You know, they're two back. Astros are 1.5 back. But are we really serious if we're Baltimore? I mean, they've got Houston on the road, then they got to go to Boston, then they come home against Atlanta. There's going to be a lot of calls about Taylor Ward. I think they would, if they kind of fall on themselves in these first three series, you got to trade Taylor Ward. I think they'll get some calls about Trevor Rogers. I mean, again, just left-handed frontline starting pitching. They certainly would be stupid if they didn't listen to that. Houston, as we talked about, you know, looking at my bold takes earlier in the program, I think Josh Hader is going to get some run. I don't know what they do positionally. I can't see Yordan going. Christian Walker is going to get a lot of run. Right-handed power, middle of the order bat, first baseman. Christian Walker will certainly be a guy that they have to entertain. It's a big contract, but they're going to certainly have to entertain it.
All right, Joe and Jensen, we do have history here about to be made. Lucas Herbert has got about a four-footer on the 18th hole. If he knocks this in, Jensen, I undersold it. It's not the lowest round in the history of the British Open. It would be the lowest round in the history of major championship golf. That's a PGA, that's Augusta, that's a United States Open. This would be, if he can complete it, we'll be able to tell you that on the other side. We're looking at history and a potential 61. He is currently your leader at 9 under par, and it looks like we're officially about to get history to happen on our watch, which is kind of cool. Stephen Hennessy is going to join the program from Golf Digest next. We'll talk more about what is happening right now overseas. It's getting wild at Royal Birkdale. We'll discuss with Stephen next right here on VSiN by the Books. So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match it. Here's the thing. Pro bettors, they spend thousands on data and tools. But what they don't know and don't want you to know is that you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. With VSiN Pro, you're going to get access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and so much more. Just tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
There is no shortage of betting opportunities this summer from daily Major League Baseball. World Cup soccer is going to conclude on Sunday to count down to our football season here in the United States, Jensen Lewis. That's why it's the perfect time right now to lock in VSiN's football special for just $175. You're going to get full VSiN Pro access through the Super Bowl. It includes our all-new NFL betting guide for the year. It's going to help you attack futures, win totals, divisional races, and the upcoming season. Plus, you're going to get daily best bets, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, AI-powered prop projections, 24/7 video on the VSiN Watch app, and coverage of every major sport all year long. Remember, the earlier you sign up, the more value you will get. Head over to VSiN.com/subscribe right now. That's VSiN.com/subscribe. Wow. In the immortal words of Jack Buck, I don't believe what I just saw. Lucas Herbert had a putt for history. About 4 feet was what it looked like. And he missed it. So he's got to settle for a tie of history. A 62 is in the house. He is your clubhouse leader at 8 under par. Stephen Hennessy, kind enough to join us right now from Golf Digest, managing editor. Give him a follow on X at @S_HennessyGD and joins us on the Progressive Guest Line. Stephen, we're watching this in real time. I'm sure you were as well. Boy, when you've got a chance to do something no other person in the history of major championship golf had the opportunity to do, and you miss it, I know it's a 62, and he's going to feel great about that. But, boy, I think that one's going to sting a little bit as he walks off that 18th green.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, you know, take nothing away from his amazing round, which is still, you know, one of the six best ever in major history, but I mean, that was kind of an all-time choke job right there. I mean, not even close. I mean, we saw him make a ton of amazing putts all day. And I mean, for that not to even have a chance was, I mean, clearly he knew the history that was up for grabs there. And it, you know, it kind of reminds me of like Phil Mickelson was going for a 59 at TPC Scottsdale back a few years ago when he was on the PGA Tour, and, you know, had about the similar length putt to shoot that 59. And, you know, again, that putt just kind of rimmed out. But this one, yeah, not even close. So unfortunate for Herbert. I think the golf gods are kind of happy that the record doesn't get to 61. It remains 62. And fittingly, the first time a 62 was shot was at Royal Birkdale in 2017 with Brennan Grace. So I thought there was maybe it was going to be a little cyclical with Herbert shooting the 61 to break the record. But, you know, now everyone who's chasing Herbert, you know, 8 under and 9 under, it's only one stroke, but that's going to make a huge difference, I think, for the afternoon wave, looking up and seeing, oh, I'm only 5 shots back or 6 shots back. That's a huge difference and a momentum changer going into tomorrow.
Oh my gosh. Stephen, one of those situations where we might put a pin in it and remember where we were, because we know every stroke so critical, especially heading into the weekend at a major championship. I think that's the operative word. We got some big names that are not going to be playing this weekend. Let me start with your reaction on Matthew Fitzpatrick. My goodness gracious. +4, one of the guys that I think a lot of people looked at his recent form and felt he would be in contention. I mean, barring something wildly unforeseen here, he is going to miss the cut. Thoughts on what you saw out of Matty Fitz and just how it really came undone for him yesterday and today?
Yeah, I mean, he was probably the most tipped golfer if you looked at all the experts on, you know, golf Twitter and all the content online. Everyone loves Fitzpatrick this week, you know, in his home country. The year that he's had, you know, was probably the PGA Tour Player of the Year up to this point, 3 wins, you know, still probably is the front runner, maybe him and Gatterup, depending on what Gatterup does this week. But that was not foreseen at all, given what Fitzpatrick has shown, and that's his iron play being so good. And we sort of knew controlling your golf ball around Birkdale is going to be so important. So, you know, for that to kind of leave him, it's a huge disappointment for him. And, you know, now to see his brother is up on the leaderboard, you know, 3 under, he's T9 and he's going to be going home. You know, the roles are really reversed for the Fitzpatrick family here. So that's going to take some getting used to, but you know, his brother is also having a great year. Fitzpatrick just, you know, the bounces of Lynx golf sometimes that could cause things. And he's playing with Rory McIlroy. Maybe that was a little extra pressure and, you know, the moment got to him. Who knows? You know, he still had a great year, but, you know, these 2 rounds clearly didn't have it. And a lot of golf gamblers are disappointed after these 2 days, that's for sure.
Yeah, that one we did not see coming for Matty Fitz to miss the cut. It looks like Rory McIlroy's safely in. He's having a good day. He's under in red figures now as he'll make the turn for the weekend here. And again, that stroke you mentioned from Herbert, it will be big if you're only 6-7 back from where you could have been. Scotty hasn't teed off yet. He is the betting favorite at +415 to still win this, Steven. He's at 200 par when he starts his round today. Where are you on Scotty from what after you saw on day one? And would you look to add anything to your card if it's not Scotty ultimately over the weekend?
Yeah, Scheffler was impressive yesterday. You know, he talked about it after his round. He probably only missed 2 shots, and he was really penalized by those shots. It was the approach into 17, the par 5, you know, goes into some weird lie behind the green. He ends up making bogey. One other shot got away from him, and like he said after, he felt like he didn't get anything at all out of his round, and he still shot a 68, and, you know, it was only a few back coming into today, and, you know, the ball striking numbers all looked good. The putting numbers were just kind of even, so, you know, Scheffler is a favorite for a reason. I'm sure he's going to do the same thing today, if not better, shoot a 66 and, you know, be a few strokes off of Herbert's lead. And, you know, he probably ends up winning this. In terms of who I like to add. I did bet Cameron Young in the middle of his round, and then I turned it on, and he proceeds to make a bogey right away. So that's just my relationship with Cameron Young summed up to a T. I think Tommy Fleetwood has a run in him today too. He also didn't really get much going at all yesterday, and still shot one under. I mean, he's right there. A bunch of great names are right there. John Rahm, Tommy Fleetwood. I think you could even go a little further down the board. I wouldn't worry about the number Herbert's at. I know he's at 8 under, but he's never even been close to a position like this. He's going to falter eventually on the weekend. So I think if your guy is anywhere within 7-8 shots currently, I mean, look down the board. You're going to get some good value on some pretty good name players. And Chris Goddard was someone I liked coming into this round, and he has a decent round going as well. So yeah, ton of value out there. Ton more golf to go, and don't be dissuaded if your guy is 7-8 shots off Herbert's lead.
Yeah, well, Stephen, that gets us to Rory McIlroy, who right now 3 under for the day through 14, 1 under for the championship. A guy that I really like that's going to tee off here shortly, or at least within the hour. Tyrrell Hatton is 1 under for the tournament. I added him for a top 10 finish, including ties on DraftKings, right around 3-1. Is that afternoon wave, from what you've seen, going to experience the similar conditions from what we saw yesterday, and would that behoove us to kind of look towards some lower scores for the guys who have yet to tee off?
Yeah, I think they're expecting similar weather to what we saw yesterday. It was typically like a shot. The afternoon wave shot one shot worse than the morning wave, so probably something similar to expect. But we still saw a number of good rounds yesterday. Obviously Jackson Suber 65 came from the afternoon wave too. So yeah, Hatton, his approach numbers yesterday were not that great, and that's kind of atypical of him. But I think when you look at stats at an Open Championship specifically, you get one or two bad bounces and that throws the stats off. So, I'm looking at everything else looks green on a stat profile, and you look at the longer term approach data, Tyrrell Hatton's one of the best approach players in the world. So I expect him to go out and shoot a, 2-3 under today, get right back in the thick of things here. I mean, that's such a fun group with Bryson playing so well and Scottie Scheffler. Also, you got to have a little action on that group. I like Hatton to kind of keep climbing up that leaderboard. I think a top 10 is a good call.
Only have about 30 seconds to go. Where are you in the whole Nick Faldo, Bryson DeChambeau? This guy doesn't have a strategy out here to how to play Lynx golf.
Man, I can't get enough of that. And then Bryson, further digging in, saying the word strategy 3 times in his, little interview on Twitter. I just hope Bryson keeps playing well so we keep getting more of this going forward on the weekend, because I can't get enough.
Stephen, great stuff as always, man. We appreciate your time. No better person to have on right now, as we almost had history unfold right before us. Still tied for one of the best rounds we've ever seen in major championship golf with that 62. Check him out at Golf Channel. Does a great job there. And again, S_HennesseyGD on Twitter. Anthony DiMondo is going to join the program before this hour is over, talk all things World Cup. And we've got our best bets that are coming up next right here on VSiN by the Books.
VSiN by the Books, right here on VSiN.
The Circus Survivor documentary is back for another season. This one is bigger than ever. 7 all new episodes kick off every Wednesday, starting July 22nd at 9 p.m. Eastern. Episode 1 is going to take you inside the growth of the most electrifying contest in all of sports betting. Now with $18.7 million on the line and the massive new Grandissimo format, raising the stakes even higher. Follow the sharp minds and bold personalities who think they've got what it takes to go the distance, whether you play Circus Survivor yourself or just love the drama of a season-long grind. This is must-watch TV. Check it out every Wednesday starting next week at 9 p.m. Eastern, only on VSiN. It is a great production. We talked about it yesterday with Mike Palm. Great having the maestro on. following the personalities and the people that think they're going to actually be able to win this thing. Jensen, I always feel like, hey, we start off the year. Everybody's got as good a shot as any. You're going to have some multiple contests. You're going back to Vegas as well. Are you going to try to sneak in to one of those production meetings? We should have some representation from VSiN by the books.
No, this is not a business trip outside of recreational business. If we want to get paid to come to the production meetings, I think we can do that. Organize that in the contract extension. But yeah, it's going to be fun. Great to see. Will be great to see David and Tom, Vegas football proxy for us out there, and did a great job for us last year. Excited to jump back into millions again this year too.
We're going to have Anthony DiBundo join the program next to talk all things World Cup with a big finale coming up on Sunday. We had a great conversation with Stephen Hennessy in the last segment. Perfect timing for Stephen. He laid it out perfectly that Lucas Herbert, yes, it's a great round, a historic round of 62. It should have been a 61, a gag job on 18 to not set the lowest round in the history of major championship golf on any of the four majors. So he's got to settle for that 62. Does open the door for guys that we like. And we wonder if that door will still be open if you want to add plays to a guy like Bryson DeChambeau. If you missed it, we referenced it with Steven when we played it earlier in the program. Please like, subscribe to the VSiN by the Books podcast. You can listen on your time. And that this whole Nick Faldo, six-time major champion, three-time open champion, said that there was no strategy, that Bryson DeChambeau has no strategy, an idea of how to get himself around a Lynx golf course. And then Bryson proceeded to go out and shoot three under and mention strategy three times in his answer. Well, Nick Faldo today, Jensen, is this a mea culpa? Let's hear from the six-time major champion.
The Bryson thing, strategy thing, has gone too far as usual. Yes, I'm an analyst. I'm on a podcast. I say something, fine. But number one, I'm a big fan of Bryson. Let's get that out. We text each other through the season, what have you. I have respect for him and his game. But it is fair to say over the last couple of years, he hasn't shown much strategy on a Lynx golf course. And I believe I know a little bit about strategy from my day. But interestingly, day one, threw the strategy thing into the ring, talked about it. Did it, played it, shot a great score. Now, if he keeps doing that and the way the golf course is playing, hard and fast, as we all know, I think we all agree, strategy will be a key to becoming a champion golfer of the year. So I do wish him all the best. If he keeps it going and keeps playing well, maybe he will be right there on Sunday to be the champion golfer of the year.
I know you love that, Jensen. By the way, Bryson is almost 11-1. I'm seeing 10-25 out there in the marketplace. Third betting choice before he begins his day today at 300 par. What'd you make of Sir Nick? I think he said it kind of nicely, right? Look, I'm an analyst now. I'm not a player anymore. Yes, I won six majors three times. I know what I'm talking about on Lynx Golf. Is that a hint of an apology there to Bryson?
Yeah. But I'm sure that they handled it behind closed doors. We live in a day and age where we got to do these ridiculous public apologies. Guy won six majors. He can say whatever he wants. Like, I'm so sick of the social media. There are so many haters out there that are not even worth your time. I always love the ones, too, that have no profile picture, just some stupid animal or, you know, like something that looks just really ridiculous. And they try and make a mountain out of molehill. Don't, Sir Nick. You don't owe anybody an explanation. You've done it at the highest level multiple times. You do you, my friend. You say what you want to say.
Yeah, and I like the fact that, you know, if they're texting each other, I'm sure they're jabbing each other a little bit too. So we can have some fun with this. You know, you don't have to be offended for people that are not offended. I'm sure maybe Bryson was a little bit offended. It doesn't sound like he is. If they're boys, they're big boys. Bryson's won a couple of U.S. Open titles as well. So that's just major champions talking amongst major champions. Sometimes the peanut gallery here on X and other places want to be offended for the parties that might not be. It would be interesting to see if Bryson can keep this up, as Sir Nick said, to be the champion golfer of the year. We've got a new email. You can get at us by the books at VSiN.com. Jensen, we've got some great inquiries that have been coming in. I think we've got another one today. What do the people have on their mind at by the books at VSiN.com?
Yeah, Jimmy from the Cape, thanks for writing in again, my friend. He said, hey, fellas, I give thanks for shows like yours. Decades in the making, evolving tenfold from the days of Feast, Koken, and Alan Root. as being a full-time player now, who is always searching for edges. A morning show to get the blood flowing with the overnight lines is refreshing. During breakfast is the best. Thanks for sacrificing your, quote, forever young nightlife for the people. Jimmy from the Cape, always appreciate it. He did have a lengthy email, and he had some great questions. Dave, I'll ask you the first, because he does have a query. Dave, who is more heated, players who bet McGregor or players who didn't unload on Mystic Max and first and second round suite underprices? And oh, yeah, what's your opinion on the Cowboys defensive personnel additions?
All right, I've got some answers for you, Jimmy. I think people that are frustrated that they bet Conor McGregor, we told you right here in the program, do not do that. We like the Max side. We talked about this last week, Jensen. If you saw what Conor McGregor posted, which was interesting, he said the official account should be of the count of the fight should be overturned to a no contest. I'll get the medical ruling out. And he said all bets should be refunded. Conor, you're not in charge of the books. I don't think you can make that call. So very bizarre that Conor's putting this out after the fact that, hey, all your bets should be refunded. Easy for Conor McGregor to say. So I think people are betting Max, or excuse me, betting Conor and Mystic Mac are still fuming about that. Now, as far as my Cowboys go on the defensive side, I talked about this with my buddy Chris Seibert last night. He's a big Commanders backer, and he says, who do you think got the better of whom? You know, we're talking about Sonny Styles going to the Commanders, and I told Chris how much I love that pick by the Commanders. But we were talking about Caleb Downs for the Cowboys, and we were both surprised that, say, a John Harbaugh didn't, who had the opportunity to take a Caleb Downs with the Giants, let him fall to the Cowboys. Jensen, you know I'm high on this football team, not just because I'm a fan. I'll be very real about them when it comes to the betting markets. If Caleb Downs, who you know well, and you know both these guys very well as a Ohio State backer, I think they're both going to make dramatic differences to these defenses as rookies. So I'm big on a guy like Caleb Downs and what he can do to affect this Cowboy defense in year one. And I think Sonny Styles, and I think you know this, we talked about it leading up to the draft. If I could have had any player in the draft, regardless of position and or where I'm drafting, Sonny Styles would have been the guy that I selected. That's how highly I think of that young man coming out of the Ohio State University.
All right, very good. He has a question for me. Jensen, Red Sox hotter than fish grease. 14-2 in their last five series, winners of 9 in a row and on the road to boot. To make the playoff prices, on June 25th, they were plus +650. July 14th, end of the All-Star break, they were plus $1.45. Cardinals, stagnant, but against one of the more difficult schedules leading into the break, 8-9 in their last five series. To make the playoff prices, June 25th, plus +250. July 14th, drifting a little bit to 3-1. He says, Jensen, coming back from the All-Star break with a team rolling or 500 squad, and your experience in general, was the All-Star break being a factor in changing trajectory of that team's season, or is it most defined by the trade deadline? Jimmy, what I would take out of the two teams that you brought in here, we talked Red Sox earlier in the show, make no mistake, that rotation, should they get a healthy Garrett Crochet back and Ranger Suarez, that's as deep a rotation as you're going to have in the American League, and they can win with that. I'm wondering what they do from an offensive infusion standpoint, and as you look kind of at the offense outside of Wilson Contreras, they will need a lot more. And by the way, I can't remember if he's going to have the suspensions. I think he's still serving the suspension coming out. I got to double check that because that's critical for the day-night doubleheader starting at 1:35 today. They certainly could use middle infield bat here. They could use a little infusion. First base, they could certainly use a little infusion, but obviously Wilson Contreras plays there. What do they do between DH and first base? Do they keep Wilson back and forth? They've had Yoshida as a DH. I'm anxious to see offensively if they add, and I think a shortstop might be one that they look for. So we'll see what happens, but great stuff again. Buy the books at VSiN.com, the email address. Great viewer emails so far this week.
Yeah, we appreciate you, Jimmy, from the Cape, getting at us here. And I would play those Cowboy overs. I do like them this year, and adjusted win total certainly will be in my account. Anthony DeBundo joins the program next. Who's going to win for all the marbles on Sunday.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books, right here on VSiN.
We are back, VSiN by the Books, Dave Ross and Jensen Lewis. Very quickly, Sam Burns has also just made major championship history. He closed 8 under par as well, tied Lucas Herbert. We have 262s on the board. Kelly Bidlin's coming up next with Dustin Swedelson on a numbers game, and I'm sure Kelly's going to have much more to say because I think he is on Sam Burns. So, again, two guys made history today just now, concluding their rounds at Royal Birkdale. We can't wait for the conclusion of the World Cup. Anthony DeBunda has been kind enough to join us here throughout this riveting World Cup. Writer, podcast host at The Ringer. Give him a follow on X at Anthony DeBundo and joins us now on the Progressive Guest Line. So a lot of things happening overseas, Anthony, in the world of golf and certainly in the world of soccer. As good as it's get as you can get here with this Final Four, now down to 2. Just as an overview, is this really as good as it gets when it comes to World Cup soccer? Because I know some people will be prisoner in the moment and say this is the best they've ever seen. Is this the best you've ever seen?
Well, it's going to be tough to top the drama that the last hour of the last World Cup final provided, with France and Argentina going blow for blow on that one Sunday morning in the middle of December back in Qatar in 2022. But in terms of the buildup, I mean, we haven't had a team repeat as World Cup champions since 1962. Mm. So Argentina has a chance to do that. We get a chance to watch Lionel Messi for probably the final time ever at the World Cup, the greatest player to ever do it. We get to watch him go up against a Spanish team that is the defending European champions. The two dominant continents in global soccer are Europe and South America, and the current champions of Europe are playing the current champions of South America in this matchup. We, of course, have Messi and Yamal, which the famous photo now that's been making the rounds that first surfaced a couple years ago when they both won titles on the same day, is now making the rounds again to an even bigger audience. People are like, how is this even possible? You know, Lamine's father was a huge Barcelona fan, won some charity raffle, and now you literally have Lionel Messi baptizing the next player of Barcelona greatness in Yamal, who has not been at his best this tournament, but still has the ability to change the game on Sunday for Spain. He's their number one attacking player. So you just have so much. You have the past, the present, the future. You have the history. And you have two really good soccer teams. And this Argentina team, you just can't kill them. You just cannot kill them.
I think that's the uniqueness of the handicap, right, Anthony, is that you have, you know, the immovable force, which is La Roja, in this just historic run, only conceding one goal thus far, up against a team that if you think it's over, it's not. And then they end up beating you in the final moments. What continues in your eyes? I have a hard time thinking that if Spain didn't change for France, they certainly aren't going to change for Argentina. And it just feels like they will limit as much possession opportunity for Argentina. Like, can Argentina get enough volume forward, enough shots on target to be able to get through what has just been an unbelievable Spanish defense?
Yeah, I think if you wanted to be critical of Argentina at this tournament, like, they were outplayed for 65 minutes against Switzerland and England. And those are the two best teams they've played. And neither of them are on the level of Spain. I'm not sure anybody except maybe France is on the level of Spain in terms of talent and quality. But you could make the case that they got a red card against Switzerland, right? They got an advantage there and won that match because of it. And then against England, the shocking tactical display to turn off the attacking switch and just completely park the bus and defend with numbers and bring on extra defenders and give Argentina the ball for free was kind of, you know, teams being the victims of their own demise. And the criticism of Argentina would be that they also aren't very good right now at ball winning. Like, ball winning is not something this team is nearly as good at now as it was 4 years ago when it won the World Cup, when it was clearly better than France in the final. Even 2 years ago at the Copa, when it was the best team there, they have really shown their age a bit. And so now you play the best possession team in the world, and you play a possession team that isn't going to give you, like England did, a sit-off period where we're just going to kind of like take our hand off the accelerator and we're going to, you know, pull off back, hit the brakes. So you trust Spain more to hold the lead, but Spain's also not that explosive right now. I mean, even in a game where they dominated France, they created one goal from open play, and it was like a little over one XG. It wasn't like this is some domination performance in attack, because their attackers aren't playing very well for the most part. So they're getting goals from midfield and defense. It's very, very similar to what they did in 2010 when they won the World Cup 1-0 over the Netherlands in the final. I wouldn't be surprised if this ended up being pretty similar.
Anthony, it's interesting because I've had people that are soccer novices ask me as I'm walking in here every morning, hey, is this thing rigged for Argentina? I'm like, no. They're like, you know, Vargentino, we've heard that joke go around. Is it one of those, like, to the victor go the spoils, though, that they're going to get the benefit of the doubt because they are the reigning defending, because they have the greatest player in the world, that sometimes, even though if you're just watching it and you have no stake in the fight here, you go, wow, that seems off? Or is it just one of those deals where Argentina's earned kind of the calls, if you will, like we talk about in the NBA or the NFL?
Yeah, I've talked about this a bunch lately. Like, I think there is a subconscious, even if the refs don't acknowledge it, deity that Messi has reached, where he is like a god amongst men. And it is hard to referee him and his team in the same way. And we saw this with the Jordan Bulls. People have said we've seen this with the Mahomes Chiefs and the Brady Pats. And, you know, there is a little bit of like, if we're always watching with like the microscope firmly on top of them, we're going to notice things that go their way and maybe choose to ignore things that don't go their way. But when you have the Cape Verde players like taking pictures with Messi after he beats them and then post them on Instagram, like the other players, the refs, like the entire tournament feels this because they know it's the last dance. They know it's the last ride of Lionel, and the country has certainly rallied behind it. The team, I mean, you can see in the Argentina team celebrations how much of this is about Messi. When Lautaro scores the winner for the semifinal, everybody runs up to Messi. Yeah, granted, he got the assist, but still, it's like, this is about him. And you wouldn't fault a referee for subconsciously not even realizing that he was maybe 55-45 in favor of Argentina instead of properly 50-50, right? So maybe there's one call or one official decision or one, you know, you're not going to book that defender who should have been booked. I think if anything, Argentina, the most ridiculous refereeing that's gone their way has been that they haven't been booked nearly enough for some of their very vicious tackles. We saw in the semifinal, both their center backs were on yellows pretty early, and then the game did become less physical. So that'll be a big part. They just announced that Slatko Vincic is going to do the final. How he manages yellow cards is going to be really important, because Argentina is going to have to kick Spain. They're going to have to kick Spain and drag this game into the mud if they want to beat them.
Yeah, I agree. So that gets us to the ultimate question. Best bet for you on the final. Who lifts the trophy? Any other way you want to handicap it? And will we watch a classic unfold between these two sides?
Yeah, I don't think Spain are the kind of team who play classics, to be quite honest with you. And I think people felt this way about France. For a casual and like, you know, as somebody who watches this sport year round, like, I love Spain. I think they're a fascinating team to watch as they try to keep control at all costs. But I can acknowledge that their games are not necessarily the most exciting. You know, Spain, France was highly anticipated. And I even said on our show before, I was like, you know, if this goes the way I think it is, I think Spain's going to win. Probably not going to be the sexiest matchup, because they're just not going to give France opportunities. And I kind of think that Spain will do the same thing here. And this is true when they played Portugal, when they played Belgium. It's going to be long periods of Spain having, you know, defensive possession, especially if they get a lead. So for the casual, if you're just watching this just to watch, you should want Argentina to score first. Because one, Argentina's been terrible with leads. It's been a problem for multiple cycles. They get too passive, and they've blown leads to Spain, to France, to Argentina, to the Netherlands. At this tournament, they blew a lead to Cape Verde multiple times, Switzerland. So that would be one thing. As far as the betting goes, I do like Spain. I still think they're short. My number would make the money line closer to plus 105. You can get plus 130 out there in the market. I've been higher than the market on Spain. I bet them every game, basically, in the knockouts. Actually, yes, this will be all five games in the knockouts that I've been on Spain in one way, shape, or form. So this, to me, is just... I'm not sure you can make a defense in the market as good as I have this Spain defense rated. So maybe I'm a little too high on Spain's defense, but I think they can smother them. And like, what did Argentina create in the first hour against England? Not much, not much. What did they create against Switzerland in the first hour? Not much. And I feel like that, to me, is still a red flag for them trying to attack an elite team.
All right, 30 seconds to go, Anthony. So you've got Spain to win the World Cup. What about the Golden Boot? And there's a lot of drama, certainly with England and France, that could go a long way to determine that. If you had to make a bet on the Golden Boot as where it stands now, which way would you go?
Yeah, so Messi's going to hold the tiebreaker, but Messi's also shifted his strategy a bit here and his tactics. He's playing more as a winger during the knockouts. He's been much more of an assister than a scorer. That's different from the group stage. They've had to do this out of necessity. I think that puts Mbappe in the driver's seat for the boot. I would take him there. The third place games tend to be very open, very free flowing. Nobody wants to defend. Everybody's having a good time. Mbappe will want the Golden Boot. I do think he's value there in the betting odds. Because again, unless they get a penalty, I don't see Messi free kick pen. Sure, maybe, but I don't see Messi being a huge part of their scoring attack. Maybe he's more assisting.
Anthony, great stuff, man. We appreciate your time throughout the entirety of this World Cup. It's been expert analysis. Jensen, great stuff. As always, if you want more VEASAN, of course you do, VEASAN.com, VEASAN Watch app, a numbers game. Dustin Swedelson and Kelly Bidlin, they're up next.